Welcome to the Unbound Healing Podcast. I'm Anne-Marie Garland, nutritional therapist and health coach at Grassfed Salsa. And with me is my co-host, Michelle Hoover, certified nutritional therapy practitioner and writer of everything you'll find at Unbound Wellness. Here we share everything about overcoming health challenges from autoimmunity to hormone imbalance and more with holistic living, mindset shifts, practical tips, and a real food paleo approach. Remember our disclaimer, the content within this podcast is intended to provide general information and is not to be substituted for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now let's get on with the show.
What is up, you guys? It is Michelle here. We have a really fun interview for you guys today, talking a little bit more about the autoimmune protocol with one of our friends, Sophie, who is coming out with a new book, which we're really excited about. And we just talk a ton about her journey with AIP and autoimmune disease and drop a ton of helpful tips. So who is Sophie? Sophie Van Tiegelen. I pray I'm saying her name right, is a passionate foodie, recipe developer, author, and photographer diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis in 2009. She used the autoimmune protocol to reverse her condition, and today Sophie lives in a full and vibrant free life from the anxiety and flare-ups that often accompany autoimmune disease. With her food and lifestyle blog, A Squirrel in the Kitchen, I'm obsessed with that name, and you will hear me just go crazy over it during this episode. Sophie shares her AIP experience and empowers others to develop new habits to promote good health and wellness. Through years of experience, she has developed simple strategies to be successful on the AIP, including numerous mouthwatering, allergen-free recipes that everyone can enjoy. Sophie is on a mission to make the AIP and all that it encompasses more accessible and sustainable for anyone looking for more nutritious, delicious, health-conscious meals. You can find her at asquirrelinthekitchen.com on social media, and we're going to talk all about her book and a little bit more about her journey. So let's go jump into the interview. Okay, Sophie, thanks for being with us this week.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be talking with you two ladies.
Yeah, we're excited. We're so excited. I think this is the first time that we've talked outside of the internet.
You mean for real?
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard when you're behind a computer screen all the time. It feels like you know people. And then when you actually talk to them in real life, you're like, oh, whoa, this is the first time we've really talked. But it's fun. We're so happy to have you here.
Well, thanks. And if we are really lucky, one day we can see each other and then it's going to be all big hugs and so yes. Exciting.
Yes, yes. Fingers crossed. So something that we like to start the podcast out with is what you are loving right now. So is there something that you're loving this week?
Well, yes, actually something caught my attention. My friend, Joanna Frankham, her next group of the AIP Reset is starting soon. And that caught my attention because I did it a while back. And it's a program designed for people who are not new to AIP. So they got it down. They know what they are supposed to eat and not eat and all that. But they need to troubleshoot a few things. And a while back, I was eating way too much AIP treats and drinking way too much coffee. It was just too much. So I needed to reduce, and I was just not able to do it on my own. So I signed up, and really, it was a fantastic experience. So when I saw, you know, her advertisement running, I thought about it. It's like a fantastic program. If you need to troubleshoot stuff and get back on track, I definitely recommend it.
Oh, I love that. I think that's so important too, to just bring up the fact that like you had realized that you were having too many AIP treats and coffee and that Same. You weren't perfect AIP, because I feel like we all kind of fall into that trap, but the internet makes us appear as though, you know, we follow this strict AIP diet 100% of the time.
No, we are real people too. Like we suffer like everybody else.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love that. It does really seem like an awesome program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Where? What's her website? Where can people find that if they're interested?
It's joannafrankham.com.
Okay, we'll link it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She used to run this with Emma from the Beacon Mom. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a little bit of reorganization there. And now it's Joanna who's running the show.
Wonderful.
She's great. It sounds like a great program. Mm-hmm. So we are here talking about, we're going to talk a lot about your new book coming up, which is really exciting, but you have an amazing story as well. And I just love your take on AIP. And I feel like you were probably one of the first like real AIP blogs I really read. I was so drawn to you by just your name. Like I was like, okay, that's a blog that I need to like subscribe, like get, follow all the things, like for sure. Your stuff is amazing. So I'm really excited to have some of these conversations with you. So the first place that I think is most natural to start is, can you tell us about your healing story with autoimmunity and all that's involved?
Yes, definitely. So my autoimmune story began in 2009. After an outpatient surgery, I started having suddenly panic attacks during the night. And then it went on and on and on, and it wouldn't stop. And I had like severe anxiety. And of course, I developed severe insomnia. And so after several emergency trips to the emergency rooms and seeing many doctors and running a lot of tests, I was finally diagnosed with Hashimoto's in 2009. And so I was put on Armour thyroid, and I decided to start a gluten-free diet because I thought that would be enough to fix everything. So life went on, and in 2012, I started to have very severe joint pain. It was very crippling. I couldn't walk anymore. So I was pretty desperate. And so I did a lot of research online, and I found blogs such as the blog of the Paleo Mom, Sarah Ballantyne, the blog of Mickey Trescott, and the blog of Eileen Laird, Phoenix Helix. And that's what got me started, because they were talking about their own story with the autoimmune protocol and how they were able to reverse their disease with the diet. And so I was in so much pain at the time, I was lost and I had nothing to lose. So I dove headfirst into the autoimmune protocol, and that changed my life. Like that's what people say, like I didn't look back and it changed my life, and it's literally what happened for me. The strongest symptoms went away pretty quickly. Like the panic attacks were gone, and the severe pain. And then it took sometimes after for every little last symptoms to go away, like a painful thyroid or my hair falling out or dry skin. But eventually after 1 year, I was able to start reintroducing foods. So that was it.
That's really great. That's kind of the same experience as me, as like my main symptoms really went away pretty quickly. But did you have to make any changes or tailor the protocol at all to kind of resolve all of your big symptoms?
Well, I never had to go really, for example, on a low FODMAP diet or something even more restrictive than AIP. At some point, I was reacting a little bit to all the cruciferous vegetables. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I was avoiding them. I never did that because I still wanted to have, you know, the good nutrients from broccoli or from kale and stuff like that. But I had to be a little bit careful, but it was all about monitoring myself, tracking my symptoms and adjusting. But eventually it was just smooth sailing.
And for you, did you have any like lifestyle aspects that were also a component that you found out later?
Oh yes, that was huge. Well, you know, at the beginning it was all about the food for me.
Totally.
But then when I started sleeping better, I was able to start, you know, exercising a little bit more, which in turn helped me sleep better and have a more more stable mood, if I can explain it that way. So, you know, lifestyle has been always really big, sleep and stress reduction. And also I'm very much also like to connect with other people around me, you know, positive social connections and spend some time in nature as well.
Yeah, positive social connection is such a undervalued aspect. I feel like especially now with social media being so prevalent and we feel like we're getting social interactions, but they just aren't the same like meaningful interactions that, you know, we really need.
Yeah. Yes,
I agree. Or current lifestyles sometimes can lead to some isolation, even when we talk over the internet. And that human feeling, that human connection is really important.
Yes. Oh, 100%. I feel that a lot. That, yeah, you feel like you have this entire life. And I mean, that goes for us specifically because we're all bloggers here, but I'm sure so many listeners can relate too, because we're all, you know, highly connected. We're all online and we feel like we kind of have to, you know, be on there to learn things. And, you know, you said that was a part, huge part of your story, finding blogs. It was a huge part of mine too. So there's so many beautiful, wonderful, amazing things about having this online community that we can connect with, but we still need to keep, you know, the real world in check too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And value the real world and those connections, because I think that's the biggest issue is that we feel like on some small level that we're socializing and we don't feel alone because we have these online connections. But then when you really look at like what those connections do compared to like an in real life connection, it's just totally different. It's like the calories from an apple compared to an Applejack, you know, it's like totally, one is just going to like totally feed you and the other one is going to just make you feel like, I don't know, a tiny little bit fed.
I love that. That is great. You need to put that on something. If we ever have podcast merch, that's going somewhere. I feel like a lot of people that listen to the podcast know what the autoimmune protocol is. But for anybody that's a new listener, do you want to, and it's a lot about, you know, what your new book is about, what your blog is about. Could you tell us a little bit, just briefly, kind of like what the autoimmune protocol is in your own words?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. That's a very good question. I see the autoimmune protocol or AIP as an elimination, reintroduction, anti-inflammatory diet. So that's a mouthful, but it means that all the food, you are going to eat real food. So that's the first base. And then there is a phase of elimination in which you are going to remove all these food that have the potential to irritate the gut and create dysbiosis and you know, all this chain reaction that's really not good for you, that will activate your immune system, which in turn is going to produce antibodies, autoantibodies, and these have the potential to attack organs. And that's how you develop an autoimmune disease. So we want to remove all this. We want to eat only the good stuff, which is, you know, vegetables and fruit, except the nightshades, all the meat, poultry, organ meat, seafood. Make sure you eat also fermented foods and drinks such as sauerkraut or kombucha, lots of bone broth and healthy fats, and that's it. So it's pretty simple ingredients. And then when you have been on the elimination phase long enough, and this varies for everyone because, you know, autoimmune disease, there are so many different ones, over 100 that have been identified today, and I'm sure there are many more. And even on one autoimmune disease like Hashimoto's, for myself, it's a spectrum. Like how long have you been sick? How severe are your symptoms? So everybody is different. And so you will have to evaluate when your gut has healed enough and your symptoms have gone away, then that's the time when you can start the reintroductions. So in the reintroductions, you reintroduce one food at a time. And then you track your symptoms to see if your body reacts to it. So it's your own test. It's built in inside your body. And if you listen to the signals, For example, you know, bloating, stomachache, skin rash, headaches, runny nose, itchy eyes, can be anything. It means this is a red flag. It means this food is not right for you at this time. And maybe you can try to reintroduce it later when you have healed a little bit more, or maybe it's definitely not a good one for you. And then you know, this one, I need to eliminate it forever. And so that's it. So it's a template and it's an elimination reintroduction. It's temporary. So it's not meant to last forever. The goal, ultimately, it's to heal your gut enough that you can tolerate as many food as possible and have as wide a diet as possible.
Right. That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm curious, how did you transition from like reading all of the blogs and going through AIP yourself to then wanting to create your own blog?
I had that same question.
Yes, actually, so I know my, I, you know, in order to, okay, let me restart again. So this whole healing journey was about learning about myself also. And I discovered that I need outside accountability in order to follow my goal and stick to them. And so actually, I didn't start with the blog. I started with Instagram, and I joined the community over there to help me stay on track. You know, we would post our meals and we would congratulate each other. And that's how I found the support to continue and to stay motivated. And from there, you know, for about a year, I was wondering, how should I start a blog or not? Because I was very motivated and I wanted to share my story with everyone. Because, hey guys, look, this is fantastic. This is what you can achieve with healthy food. And so it was, one, to keep myself motivated, and two, to spread the message that I started blogging.
That's very cool. So, million-dollar question from me. How did you come up with your name?
Well, you know, my hair, I'm a redhead. I'm pretty curly. And so, like, when I put it in a ponytail, it looks like the tail of a squirrel.
Oh my gosh.
Hence the word, like, yeah, it's cute.
It's the cutest thing I've ever heard. I love it. I love your name. It's so fun.
Thank you.
So what did you find the most difficult when you first started the autoimmune protocol?
Well, actually, I didn't think that starting the autoimmune protocol was difficult. What I found difficult was to stay motivated in the long run. And then what to eat when there is nothing to eat.
Yeah.
So for the first difficulty, I already told you a little bit about that. You know, in order to stay motivated, I looked for outside support from the community. So there's a whole AIP community on Instagram, and there are many Facebook groups that maybe we could link in the show notes so that people can find them. But having the chance to talk with other people who are going through the same diet as me has been a huge help. And then what to eat when there is nothing to eat, like basically make sure that you always have something safe to eat in your fridge, because that's when you might make a bad choice.
Yeah, totally. And like, I always have to have a can of sardines around, or I'm just like, I'm just going to be done right now. That's amazing advice for sure. That's something that I struggled with a lot in the beginning of, I just did a whole 30 recently, and I had a couple of moments of like, what am I going to do now? Like, I don't have safe food around, and it's not even about like, oh, well, I'm holding these M&Ms back from myself. It's no, if I eat these M&Ms right now, I'm going to pay for it later, and it's not worth it. So I think that that's good advice.
But now, it's different.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. So it's difficult to keep emergency AIP food on hand because there isn't much, actually. Because when you read the labels on the shelf-stable foods, you know, sometimes, many times, you will find yucky ingredients that you just don't want to eat. So always make sure that you read your labels. But like you said, like always have a can of tuna or sardines. And then I like to mash an avocado and mix it with the tuna and sardines.
I do that too, yeah.
Yeah, and then if you are lucky enough and that you have reintroduced seeds and nuts, maybe you can find a good cracker that you can use. I like the Mary's crackers. Like, have you seen?
Those are good, yeah.
You know that brand? Like, they have the original, then they have the herbed one. You know, it's a good, it's a good brand.
Those are good. And the Simple Mills crackers.
Oh my gosh, yes.
We're Simple Mills fans over here on this podcast.
Do you have Simple Mills, Sophie?
Well, I know the brand. I've seen it at stores, but I've never tried their crackers. I'm oh curious my now. Gosh.
And you're in Colorado, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you're in a good, you're in like a food haven for all of this stuff. Yeah.
Where are you at in Colorado?
I'm close to Boulder, so it's pretty central. And like
one thing we were talking about right before we started recording was dining out. So are there any AIP restaurants there?
I love it. Okay. Yes. I can't wait to hear all your recommendations because Boulder's amazing.
Or AIP paleo friendly.
Paleo friendly.
Oh yes. More paleo friendly because AIP, you know, it's kind of hard because you never know which oil they are going to use in the kitchen or very often. And that was one of the first food that I reintroduced just for this purpose. It was pepper because very often they will season their food with salt and pepper. And it's already done in advance. Yeah. But like in Boulder, I love zeal.
Yes.
I don't know. I love zeal. I go like there regularly. And then there's Fresh Thyme also. And they even have a bone broth bar.
Oh, how cool.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing.
Fancy.
Oh, it's great. My husband and I went to Estes Park a couple years ago and we landed in Denver and we drove up to Estes Park. I was like, we have to stop in Boulder. And we spent, you know, just kind of the afternoon walking around and we ate at Zeal and it was just amazing. I love, 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 love Boulder. It's on my list to go back soon. But
ooh, then we have to meet this time, Michelle.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I just blazed through the last time and I like didn't stop to think to ask like who was there. You know, we were there for like it was like a half day type thing, but I was so obsessed with it that I was like I need to spend like way more time here. Mm-hmm. All the people listening who are like, "Where should I go on my next vacation?" Colorado.
What I like also at Zeal, I don't know if you saw that, but they have fresh juice shots. Like, ooh, you know, that they serve in little shot glasses. It's so cute and they're like very vibrant colors. So that's so delicious. And I also love their lavender lemonade.
Oh,
so good.
Gosh. That just like, now my heart needs to find some lavender lemonade in Austin. Like, holy moly.
I'm sure it's super easy to make also.
Oh, yeah. That's
wink, wink.
So tell us about your new book. Your book is about simplifying AIP and making it easier. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your book and then maybe any tips you have on that topic specifically?
Yes. So my new book. Yes. So I'm very proud of it. It's my new baby and I'm very excited.
It's beautiful.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, I had a blast with the photographer because it's not the first time I'm working with her and she gets me and she understood what I wanted to convey, which was like using simple ingredient, but fresh and healthy. And that came through in her photography. You know, it's very light and
it's
bright.
It's very light. That's kind of what that's kind of like my style of photography that I love. And yeah, there are just some photos in there that you see it. It's like, wow, I want to eat that. And yeah, it's simple. It's stuff that it's like, it's beautiful looking, but it's like, I can do that. So.
Yeah. So focus on nutrient density, of course, and anti-inflammatory foods, variety. So no, that's very important too. I mean, eat as much different food as you can and simplicity. Because I wanted to make, to show that the autoimmune protocol is accessible. It's that you can do this and that it can be appealing for everyone. So it's possible for families, even if you are the cook and you are the only one on the autoimmune protocol, you can prepare stuff that everybody will love. And then, but that in the book, there are two parts. So the first part is a short introduction to the autoimmune protocol with, you know, it's really a summary, because I wanted people to be able to jump right in with actionable information and get results quickly. And then after 100 recipes. So that's it.
So do you have any tips, kind of just because the whole point, the whole thing of the book is, you know, making AIP accessible, which it totally does that. Like I see, it was one that really just kind of jumped out to me was that I think it was like a strawberry salsa and it was just so, it looked like I can go whip that up together right now. And it just looks so great. So do you have any just like tips of how people can make the autoimmune protocol easier, how they can make, you know, their all the stuff more accessible? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, a few. So my first one, my number one tip is to keep it simple in your plate. So think about your plate. You want to fill it up with 3/4 of vegetables. Usually I like to mix high starch and low starch vegetables, such as sweet potatoes and kale, or beets and leeks, for example. And then the remaining quarter with protein. Very often for me, it's meat because I don't have easily access to good fish. And then healthy fats. So that's what you are aiming for. So keep it simple and don't try to recreate your old favorites. It's going to be much more labor intensive. And in the beginning, unless it's for a special occasion, stay away from all the AIP baking. We are, you know, wonderful globbers. Wonderful bloggers who are coming up with fantastic recipes for AIP desserts, and you know, they are exactly what you need for that special occasion. But on a regular basis, stay away from that.
Yeah, I always say with my things, I'm like, this is a special occasion, like this is coming out on Valentine's Day because it's Valentine's Day. It's not like every single day.
Right, and cookies. I think yeah, it's important to have those that taste really good and don't make you feel deprived, but just for the occasion.
Yeah. The point is it's a healing protocol with nutrient-dense food that's simple and easy. And that's what I love about the book is that it is really just simple flavors. And I feel like we can get bogged down sometimes of trying to make something that, like you said, of wanting to kind of recreate our old favorites or wanting to have something that's just really going to wow everybody. And yeah, that can kind of, you know, it's so different than just like being like, okay, I'm just going to have some beef and some carrots and like a side salad. Like that's fully nourishing and delicious as well. It may not be, you know, this is not like a BJ's Pizookie, but it's still just like an amazing nutrient dense dish. And I love that that's what this book does.
Mm-hmm. And then many of the recipes also in the book lends themselves to batch cooking, which I do a lot. Batch cooking is saving my life. You know, you have to invest a little bit of time when you do it. Usually I do it one time during the week and one time in the weekend, during the weekend. But then I have like so many meals after. I can just reheat and voila, that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I think that we're both fans now of that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you mentioned, well, so Sophie, you mentioned that your protein is primarily meat because you don't have access to high quality fish. And we have actually received a question about that, like about sourcing fish. Can you kind of explain what you meant by that? Like why you don't purchase fish?
Yes, and actually that's a perfect example of how I've had to adapt the autoimmune protocol for myself. So at the beginning, I would just buy fish from everywhere, right? But then I started reacting to some fish and I had to look into what's this? Where is this coming from? And I noticed that when it was a farmed fish, I was reacting to it. And as opposed to that, when it was wild caught, I was doing fine. So my sense is that there must be something in the feed of what they give to the farmed fish that might also be, you know, soy or gluten, and I was reacting to it. But because I was, you know, paying attention to my symptoms, I was able to catch it quickly. And so now I only buy wild caught fish, and that's only available at Whole Foods. So I had to drive next town to buy good fish. Now it's better because they open a Whole Food in my hometown. But before that, I had a lot of driving to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You just kind of have to go with what's accessible sometimes. I totally agree with that. That it's like, okay, well, this isn't ideal, but this is what I have. Usually when it's harder. I mean, I live in Dallas. Like, we're not really like the fresh fish here. It can only be so fresh. So I usually go to Whole Foods and buy just like a huge bag of frozen salmon and eat off of that for like the next few weeks. But yeah, I think that's important that you mentioned that it's like, okay, we kind of got to, you know, do what we can.
And also because like wild caught fish is usually more expensive. So just for budget reasons, I can't eat it as many or as often as I would like.
Oh yeah. So what are your favorite like budget friendly AIP compliant things to have in your fridge or in your pantry at any given time? It's a loaded question, but
first I try
just
to
like
stay
top
away.
Five.
I stay away from AIP treats because they are very convenient, but you know, they just explode my budget, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I stick with foods that I can find at my grocery store. And I always have spaghetti squash and another type of squash. I love butternut squash. You know, they give me a lot of bang for my bucks. I can go many meals with that. I will choose always a whole chicken over chicken breast or chicken legs because it's less expensive. And then I love to do crock pots and, you know, a big piece of meat in the crock pot, like a pork shoulder. Usually less expensive. It's a less expensive cut of meat, and I get a lot of mileage out of that as well. And so, and then I like, you know, I shop seasonal. Anything that's seasonal is always less expensive. During the summer, I gorge myself on kale and chard and lettuce, all these greens, vegetables.
Do you have a good farmer's market near you? I mean, I know in Boulder, they have like a world-class farmer's market. I don't know how far that is from you, but do you do a lot of that local shopping, or do you do a lot of supermarket, or kind of like a mix?
No. So I go to Whole Foods for meat and seafood. And then I go to my local vitamin cottage for all the vegetables because they shop local. Everything is in the same place. Everything is organic. I don't even have to think about it. And everything is conveniently in the same place. I'm not a big fan of farmers market. I don't know why, actually. I never really caught on. Huh. It's bizarre because when I was a little girl back in Belgium, we would go with my mom or my grandma to the market every Wednesday morning. And I remember, I can see them like, you know, discussing the price and buying stuff. And we would always come back like loaded with, you know, big bags. It was fun.
Yeah, I love the farmers market.
It can be a hit or miss here in the U.S. Like a lot of the time, farmers markets could be just like this amazing resource to get wonderful food. And then other times it's just like soap and bracelets.
I actually totally agree with you there. Like in Austin, I feel like there's literally not a single protein supplier in at least in the farmer's market that I go to that I can think of that doesn't have like amazing quality protein where they really take care of their animals. They're all like pasture raised. But in Fargo, where my husband is from, we went to a farmer's market there and it was just what you said, Michelle. It was like jewelry, soaps, and coffee. And that was like pretty much all I could get from them.
I mean, those providers need to sell those things too. I mean, I'm happy that they're there doing their thing, but I also want the protein and the veggies. So yeah, we have that issue here. I have to go all the way downtown to get like a really good meat provider, which I'm not always willing to do because Dallas traffic gives me anxiety. So,
but you know what? Something that I've done, not the farmer's market, but getting in touch with a farmer in the area, that's the best way to get very cheap bones for your bone broth.
How did you do that? What was your process there for seeking out a farmer?
So you can go on a Facebook group in your area and ask around, hey guys, do you have the address from a farmer that you can deal with, or just do a Google search. And they are on Google, they will come up. Then you just give them a phone call, go out to the farm, and they usually have like huge fridge in the farm, you know, the walking kind. And sometimes I even have had like free bones that way because they just don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, they have a lot of it. And I have another good resource for that, actually, now that we're talking about this. So the Weston A. Price Foundation, they have like local chapters. So if you go to Weston A. Price, like just Google Weston A. Price Foundation, find your local chapter. And that's how I found all of my favorite providers, is that they kind of vet all of these local farmers and growers to see if they are doing things, you know, up to par, if they're actually raising their meat well, and if they're actually using good quality farming practices, they will join that local chapter. And there's so many of those. I would be surprised if people didn't have one in their area or at least close to them. So that's a good option to get in touch with farmers as well. Mm-hmm. Weston A. Price.
Always, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
So let's get back a little bit to your book and some of my favorite recipes in it. There's the rosemary thyme focaccia is just like hands down the most gorgeous looking bread, AIP bread.
It looks really good.
Oh my gosh. It looks so legit.
It reminds me of, so I'm going to give everybody a throwback here. You know that bread and macaroni grill? You know, you go to Macaroni Grill and they're like, here's just like this huge loaf of bread. Like, enjoy this entire loaf while you wait. I'm like, thanks. I will eat this whole thing. It kind of reminds me. I feel like that is like the AIP version of that.
Oh, you know, if I had the scratch and sniff capability in the book, that would be one that where I would put it, because with the rosemary and thyme. Yeah. So it's a focaccia, right? So it's not supposed to rise. Actually, you can't make any AIP bread rise because there's no gluten. So you can't make it happen. Like, sorry to burst your bubble, people, but it's not happening.
I just spent like 3 days trying to make muffins that were big and puffy. I'm like, I'm wasting so much flour. This isn't happening. So yeah, that's a thing.
So this bread is going to stay pretty flat. And it's kind of dense. And we can have active yeast on the autoimmune protocol, which is not a well-known fact. So I've added yeast in this recipe because I think that it just gives a little something, a little taste that makes it that even better. But it's perfect. Like, you just like break apart little pieces and you can dip it in olive oil with your favorite herbs like the Italians do. Delicious. Or dip it in a stew, in a soup, or you can put some chicken liver pate on there.
Yum.
Yes.
The sky is the limit.
Right. And that would be such a good recipe to kind of have on hand to add to like a salad. Like, let's say you just don't want to cook dinner or something. You add that to a salad and it just makes it feel so much more special. Mm-hmm. So going back to kind of like the simple AIP.
So in the instructions, I give the steps to make one big focaccia, but why not like divide the dough into little, you know, little round balls and make them some AIP rolls.
Right. Mm. Oh, that would be great. Well, and then you also have an iced coffee, which I saw first on your pre-order page on your website. I'm like, whatever that iced coffee is, I need it. It looks so good.
Oh, it's so delicious. And it goes hand in hand with a maple vanilla coconut creamer. It's delicious.
That's the kind of stuff that people really struggle with. And I know that I struggled with, is that you just, you know, you have those traditional flavors that you love, like coffee, that you just don't really get anymore. And yeah, that looks like an amazing alternative. So when does the book come out?
So it's on pre-order right now.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere in the world. But it's coming out June 12th.
Cool.
I have to think for a minute. June 12th.
So I was like, I was hoping that people would have time to drink the iced coffee during the summer, and they will. They will have it in the height of summer. That's awesome. And yeah, another one that Anne, you wrote down that jumped out to me as well. You had like a white minestrone soup in there, which looked really good. Minestrone is like that. Whenever we went to Italian restaurants when I was a kid, which we went to a lot, my dad's Italian. My mom would always order minestrone soup, and it's hard to get that, you know, super creamy kind of texture on AIP. But so that one's like a white minestrone soup, but it looks just as good. It looks really good.
Yes, really definitely. Good. And there is a little bit of bacon in there too. Mm. So yes, like you say, woo. But actually there is one even better in the cookbook. That's really my favorite. It's the seafood chowder. Yes. And so on purpose, I didn't put any shellfish in the recipe because I can't do shellfish. I mean, it's a common allergy, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The seafood chowder is only with fish. Which is safe. And if you are feeling adventurous, you can swap out the ingredients and add whichever shellfish you want. But otherwise, that recipe, excuse me, that recipe is probably one of my favorite.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I have to be honest, I never would have tried that, but you kind of sold me on it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think I'll probably have to try that one.
So another little hidden gem, and there is no picture of that one, unfortunately, but it's an anti-inflammatory lemon ginger popsicle.
Ooh.
So that one is very, very refreshing also for the summer.
That does sound
Michelle's
really
on a
good.
Popsicle kick, right?
Oh, we're popsicle people in this house. My husband, we have like little popsicle makers, and he fills it. He'll eat a popsicle and then he'll turn around, wash it out, and fill it back up. It's like, okay, popsicle number two coming up, putting it in the freezer. He does a lot of popsicles.
I have like a baby mouth. I can't handle them. That's really weird.
So I have one question for you, and this may be a selfish question. What do you like? So you have a blog, and then you have a cookbook as well. You have another cookbook, the Simple French Paleo. And now this is your second cookbook, right?
Right.
This is the second one. Okay. So what do you like about cookbooks versus blogs?
Well, when I'm cooking, I always love to have a book in my hands, because mm-hmm. I will make alterations, and I like to write with a pen in the margin, and you know, I write there, okay, what I thought about this, does it need more of this, less of that? I'm just very traditional for that. And for example, when I'm reading, even when it's fiction, I prefer to have the book in my hands.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people are like that. I don't feel like that's just you. It's funny. I have like a print button on my website, and I never do that, but I see so many people using it, and so many people ask me about print cookbooks and talk about print cookbooks. So it is not going out of style anytime soon. And yeah, I love, you know, holding a cookbook in my hand and having it open. I feel like, you know, online recipes are amazing because they're so fast. I can write something today and have it up, you know, same day if I really wanted to hustle at it. But yeah, there's something different about having a cookbook in your hand and, you know, just the amount of effort and love that goes into making a cookbook and having one big themed topic rather than just recipes all over the place. It's awesome. And your cookbooks are beautiful. And I'm glad that you're writing them.
Thank you so much. The way you are talking about this, I wouldn't be surprised if you were to come up with your own cookbook, Michelle.
Anne and I were just talking about that yesterday. Uh-huh. That's one of my goals. So it's not happening right now, just because you know how it is. It's a tiered process. You can't go and start and come out with a cookbook tomorrow, but it's in the works for me.
It's definitely a teamwork.
Yeah.
You can't do everything by yourself. I mean, you can, but then it's time consuming. So I always have a team around me for this. And then we know with Amazon self-publishing, everything's possible now. The process is really easy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a big goal of mine. And I'll be talking about, I have a process that's going to come out soon that you guys are going to start to see some of the things that I'm doing to work towards that. But I love, that's like my happy place is going to Barnes and Noble and looking at cookbooks. But, and it's just something so amazing that, you know, like when you have a cookbook, you know, that's something that your grandkids can look at, you know, who knows where the internet is going to be and where, how relevant blogs are going to be 30 years from now, but cookbooks are never going to go out of style.
No. And I'm using my cookbooks. I mean, yeah, it's the stuff that I like and I'm using them like to plan my meals and that's what I'm eating out of my cookbooks. They're useful.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're so useful. So where can our readers find you and where can they pre-order the new cookbook?
So the best place to find me is on my blog, is Squirrel in the Kitchen. I'm active also on social media, mainly Instagram and Facebook. And if you go to my blog, there are little social media icons that you can click on to follow me on social media. And then again, if you want to find the cookbook, it's on pre-order. There are pre-order bonuses up until June 12th that you can claim when you pre-order. And it's in big in the front of my website, so you can find it easily. But basically, you can pre-order anywhere in the U.S. with Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound. And then it's also available in U.K., Australia, and Canada.
That's awesome. That's so exciting. Yeah, you have some awesome bonuses. So we'll link to that page in our show notes. And let me tell you guys something, just as this is me saying this, because I know that I would feel uncomfortable saying it if it were my book. But so pre-orders are so important for authors and like the book and like this whole AIP movement in general, because pre-orders is what helps you kind of like move up in the ranks to become like a bestseller and be on like the Amazon bestseller and all these lists. So if you guys, and it's real, I love pre-ordering books because right when it comes out, it's there. It's just like a little, it's kind of like Christmas where you ordered something before, like months before, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's here. It's exciting. So us supporting each other in this AIP community, like think of everybody that you know that has an autoimmune disease as well, that you want them to get the same benefits that you do out of this healing lifestyle. Supporting other creators, other bloggers, other authors and podcasters in this community is how we spread the word. So pre-ordering is such an amazing thing that you can do. And you get awesome bonuses this time around. So that's my little pre-order spiel. I think it's important. So tell us something that we'd like to do at the end of the podcast is share your meal of the week, like a meal that you're really loving this week, to give our listeners some ideas. So what is your meal of the week?
So I did two things this week that I've been eating several days out of. I made a simple chicken and vegetable soup. The recipe is on my blog because I love to have like a soup that I warm up quickly for breakfast. And then I made a huge spaghetti squash and I followed the recipe from my new cookbook, The Autoimmune Protocol Made Simple. And I added some garlic and some fresh herbs. And I served this, what was my protein this week? Rotisserie chicken.
That sounds awesome.
And some kale on the side. Yep.
I love soups for like an easy little batch cook, but yes, that's awesome.
We're pro breakfast soup for sure.
Oh yeah. In this corner of the internet, the world, we are very pro soup. So thank you a ton for coming on. We will have the links for everything in the show notes. You can find everything on Sophie's website, or if you just scroll up in your app, you will find it there. But thank you again so much for coming on, Sophie. It was a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Michelle and Anne. It was a blast for me. I love talking about food and the autoimmune protocol. It's fun. It's not work. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. Heck yes. Heck yes. It is so much fun. There's so much that you can do. And you guys will definitely see that with this new book. So you can find Sophie on her website, A Squirrel in the Kitchen, me, Michelle, on BetterWellness.com, and at GrassFed Salsa. And then find us all on social media. Hit us up, talk to us, ask us questions, all that good stuff. So have a good week, everybody. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Unbound Healing Podcast. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes and leave us a review. Until next time, you can find more from me, Anne, at grassfedsalsa.com, and more from Michelle at unboundwellness.com. We'll see you next week. Bye.